Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Joe Beninati. You're listening to NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face Off podcast. Here he is. Here's your host, J.J. Regan.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face-Off podcast. I'm your host, the Capitals correspondent, J.J. Regan. And today, we have a very, very special episode. We are going to have the man himself, Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. He is going to join us to talk all things Caps and all things hockey. We advertised this at the beginning of the summer. So now, without further ado, here's Greg Wyshynski. Joining us now on the podcast is our very special guest. He is the senior NHL writer at ESPN and movie enthusiast, so he may actually get some of my reference for a change. It's Greg Wyshynski. Greg, thanks for hopping on the podcast today.
It's my pleasure. Are you saying most guests don't get random pop culture references that you make?
My normal co-host, Tarek El-Bashir, has no idea of any of the references I make ever.
Oh, no. If it's Tarek, then that, I mean, I've known Tarek for many, many moons, and that makes total sense to me. He is of singular mind in this world, and it is not Marvel movies.
Yes. Well, so I always introduce Tarek in an insulting way as my sidekick, but I always make these random references, and he the beginning of the show is always me explaining to him how I just insulted him. So that's a fun game. Anyway, so your Mount Puckmore article on the Metro Division came out today, just in time for the podcast. I want everyone to go out and read it, so I won't give your four for the Capitals. But I will ask you, who was the hardest guy to leave out of the four? Who's the guy who just missed the cut?
Well, we could say the four. It's fine. I mean, I hope people visit it to read the justification for it. But the four that we chose, and by the way, to reestablish, Mount Puckmore is a bit that we do. Last time we did it was on Puck Daddy in 2010, so it was a good time for a refresh. And it's basically the four players that best signify or describe the history of the franchise. So it's not the four best players or anything like that. It's the four guys that you look at that mountain and you say, okay, I know about this franchise's journey based on who these people were. Mm-hmm. So for the Capitals, it was Rod Langway, Dale Hunter, Olli Kolzig, and Alex Ovechkin. So the two players that people seem to be really hot about not being on the mountain in some way, shape, or form is Nick Backstrom and Peter Bondra. And basically, our thinking was, you know, Kolzig was, for my money, a definitive player for the Capitals during that stretch of time in the late 90s. You know, the first cup final appearance, everything else. You know, having been in Washington at that time, going to the University of Maryland and settling down there, until Alex Ovechkin, it could be argued that Kolzig was the most popular player maybe in the franchise's history. I mean, it was a mania around Olli. So having him on there instead of Bondra, to me, felt right. And then when it came to Backstrom, I just felt that having Ovi on there was the descriptor for this era, this obvious, you know, glorious era now where they finally won the cup. And, you know, obviously the biggest star in franchise history will go down as one of the best players in the history of the league. Having him on there, to me, was representative of this current era. If you wanted to make the argument that Hunter comes off the mountain, I'm willing to listen to it, but it's really hard for me to look back at the history of the franchise and not say that Dale Hunter wasn't one of the definitive faces of this team during the time that he played there. But, you know, Vondra, Backstrom, both very deserving. Unfortunately, it's only a four-face mountain.
Sure. And I'm with you. I would definitely have Dale Hunter in there. And there could be no better encapsulation of Nicklas Backstrom's time in Washington than to just miss the cut.
Right, exactly. And when all is said and done, maybe he's on there. I mean, for Pittsburgh, you know, we have Mario and Yager and then Crosby and Malkin, because you can't, you know, discuss this era for the Penguins and this mini dynasty for the Penguins without having both those guys in the mountain. So who knows, when all is said and done, if the Caps do this thing a few more times, it could be that Backstrom is sort of as indispensable as Malkin is for the Penguins.
Very true. You also wrote a recent article on ESPN about the most baffling contracts of the offseason, and right at the top of the list was one, Tom Wilson. I feel like people have a very different opinion of Tom Wilson in the Washington area than pretty much anywhere else. So let's get into it. What was it that you found so baffling about Wilson's new deal?
The money. The thing about Wilson, and it was tough including him on the list for me, because I'm someone who values his contributions as a player. Now, from a point production standpoint, I think that the money they gave him was sort of a hope and a wish that he maybe gets a little bit closer to that Wayne Simmons territory as far as point production versus what he's putting up now as a top line player. And you know, frankly, when you're his kind of player and playing with the players that he does, he'd want it to be more of a Wayne Simmons or a Milan Lucic, you know, that sort of point total, that sort of offensive output. And I think at one point in his younger days, and he's not that old, but I mean, as a guy coming up, there was that projection that he was going to be more of a point producing power forward. The offensive production hasn't been there necessarily to warrant the financial compensation. But again, for me, it was a tough call, because I do agree with you. There's a lot of people that don't follow the Capitals that don't understand how Wilson fits into this equation, what he did, his contributions in the postseason in particular. And the fact of the matter is that there's a finite number of players in the NHL right now that can change a game with a hit or change the trajectory of a series with a hit. And Tom Wilson's one of those guys. And so I think his value as a player is underrated, but the value of the contract is a bit much, if that makes any sense.
It certainly does. I do find it strange that when you're bidding against yourself, somehow the price still goes up. But
right.
With a guy like Tom Wilson, I think it's also a unique contract in that it's one of those contracts where the more years you give it, actually the higher the price has to go, because you're taking away his prime years, and it's not just a bridge deal. I mean, this is going to go until he's 30, so this is going to be his big deal. So it was unique in that way.
You gobble up a few unrestricted years, and I think from that aspect, you can make the argument the money at least makes some sense. I mean, the fact of the matter is, as we saw with Lucic with the Edmonton Oilers, is that there's always going to be somebody out there that values this type of player.
Sure.
Especially someone who has proven that he can play on a top line or in the top six. So the idea that the money would have been on the table for him in his UFA years is a reasonable argument to be made. But I mean, the contract on its face, as he said, he's an RFA, you have him over a barrel, no one's going to offer sheet the guy. It did seem like a little bit of overcompensation for somebody who didn't exactly have that much leverage in the deal.
Sure. All right, back to happier topics. You have followed the NHL as closely as anyone over the past few years. You are also very familiar with this team and this area. So I know it's a broad question, but from what you saw, what was different? How did they actually get over the hump and abolish all of those demons and finally do it this year, do the deed and get the cup?
A few perfect storm of factors, I think. You know, from a on-ice perspective, I think it's the first time in the playoffs that every big gun they had was firing at the same time. You know, Ovechkin, we all know, has been unfairly maligned for his playoff performances. But in the past, you know, there have been times when Backstrom hasn't performed. There was a season, at least, where Kuznetsov didn't perform. And you know, Braden Holtby would have series in which he looked like, you know, the second coming of Ken Dryden. And then, you know, series in which he was outplayed by Matt Murray. So I think all of those four essential players playing at their peak at the same time is undeniable in where this all ended up. The other thing, though, is that there was this sort of nihilistic approach to this season, and you know, I've heard people kind of assign this to Barry Trotz and the philosophy that he helped kind of establish early in the year, maybe because he was staring into the abyss of not having a contract for the following season. But this idea that they weren't going to be in their own heads about stuff as much as they used to anymore, because, you know, what's the point? They couldn't get past the Penguins. They were the team that constantly disappointed. And it just seemed like there was a certain amount of attitudinal change for this team, whether it was simply just trying to relish it a little bit more, have a little bit more fun, and not stress about, you know, what was on the horizon, whatever that psychological, and maybe it was Tony Robbins, who knows, whatever that change was, you know, obviously it took hold because they approached the postseason with a completely different mindset. And then the other aspect of it too was, you know, this wasn't a team where they went out and tried to bring quote unquote rings into the room or try to supplant people that left with other veteran players, you know, find another Justin Williams to replace Justin Williams. They allowed younger players to compete for jobs. They allowed younger players to push people for ice time. And the infusion of a bunch of guys that didn't know any better because they hadn't been in the toxicity of those previous losing seasons, I think also was a catalyst for the changing psychology of this team.
You and I actually argued about this during the playoffs, so I know that you believe it was a mistake for Trotz to go with Grubauer to start the playoffs. Why do you think he should not have stuck with the hot hand and went back to Braden Holtby to start the playoffs?
Well, because I think even when in Holtby's most average playoff seasons, he's been great. And he's a proven playoff performer. I thought the best thing for him would have been to just jump into it with both feet to begin a playoff series and then just kind of wipe the slate clean from the regular season struggles. I didn't like the idea in the beginning of a playoff series handing the reins to a novice when you had somebody there with that much experience. And, you know, there's obviously going to be two camps here. One, my camp, that says that they're lucky this didn't fester for longer and they got out of that series unscathed after what happened in the first two games. But then there's another, you know, point of view, and it's fine, that says that Holtby needed that. He needed to be sitting on the bench at the beginning of the playoffs and looking at Grubauer, and that's what kind of set him right. What the answer is, I don't know. I mean, you can say that things worked out better than they ever did, so maybe he made the right decision. But tactically, I didn't quite understand it, given that we aren't dealing with a goalie in Braden Holtby that has shown that he, once the playoffs start, is going to, you know, fall apart.
You hear that, everybody? Even before this season, Holtby was great in the playoffs. I'm sick of all you people who keep telling me they should have traded Holtby last year.
Well, he's second to Ovechkin in people that can't seem to read a stat line in the playoffs and have a certain, you know, just because, you know, and that was, I mean, again, to go back to the other thing, there's good performances, and in Holtby's case and in Ovechkin's case, you know, uniformly their performances in the playoffs were always pretty good. And then there's what they did this postseason. And admittedly, like, Holtby wasn't a guy that won series on his own in previous playoffs, and he won series in this playoff. And Ovechkin wasn't a guy, as we all know, that necessarily scored goals at critical moments, and that's completely what he did in these playoffs. So, you know, I agree with you that I think both those guys have been unfairly maligned. They've not been the problem, but I also agree that, you know, they were exponentially better this postseason than they've ever been.
Sure, no question about that. All right, you're going to have to help me with something here. Now, I know that when Barry Trotz suddenly found himself in need of a job, there was only one job opening. But for me, I was shocked that he went to Long Island before John Tavares made a decision. Couldn't he have waited and gotten a better situation somewhere else?
I think it's possible, but I also think that this is a guy who had an opportunity to strike while the iron was hotter than it'll ever be again, probably, to get the money and the term that he was looking for. He wasn't going to get it in Washington. He found a team that was willing to give it to him. I think that Barry knows that with Lou Lamoriello there for at least the next couple of years, he's going to have an executive that is competent and that might be able to in some way see them out of this. But I also think that, you know, his going there without Tavares signed, I think speaks to the overall philosophy of the organization that they didn't think he was going to leave. I genuinely believe that Lamoriello going there, Trotz going there, and the way the Islanders handled this situation throughout Tavares's last year there was an indication that they thought he'd be an Islander in perpetuity and didn't think that there'd be a picture of him in Maple Leafs sheets on his childhood bed after he signs there for 7 years. I truly, genuinely believe that they misjudged it. And you know, based on what Lamoriello did in the aftermath, you know, signing Valtteri Fuppola, signing Leo Komarov, had no plan B for this.
Sure. And I love that picture of Tavares, except for the Phantom Menace alarm clock, which was easily the worst of the eight.
Now, I still haven't locked down exactly if he's a prequels fan. I'd have to have a conversation with him at some point about that. But I did get word from the venerable Bob McKenzie that the existence of that alarm clock is because Tavares was always worried about missing the alarm to get to practice as a kid. And so that was actually his second alarm clock in the room. So it may just be something that works functionally and doesn't speak to some massive prequel fandom that has heretofore gone unreported.
Well, we can only hope. Otherwise, that is a major red flag. Looking around the rest of the league, who looks like the biggest threat to take down the Caps next season?
Well, I mean, you start in the East, and I think the Tampa Bay Lightning have been gearing up for this particular season now for a couple of years. They have half their defense going unrestricted after this season, and are going to be missing a few other guys throughout the lineup. So this is as loaded for bear as this team is going to be, and by far the deepest, scariest team I think in the East. Boston is a team that seems to be hitting that sweet spot between their older veteran guys like Chara, their in their prime guys like Marchand and Pasternak, and then the younger guys in that lineup like McAvoy. They seem like they're the team that's sort of primed to hit that sweet spot this year and really contend. The Leafs, obviously, loaded up front, trying to win without having too much on D, trying to maybe do that Penguins thing from a few years ago. Yeah. That's the East. In the West, oh boy, Nashville and Winnipeg are like just two titans, and it's, you know, a rightful criticism of the NHL playoff formula that, much like the Penguins and Capitals, the Jets and Predators are going to have to go through each other in the second round each year. But those two teams, and then maybe if things click the right way, the San Jose Sharks could be the contenders too. My dark horse in the East, and I don't know if they're a cup team, but I think they're going to be a 100-point team, are the Florida Panthers. I really like what they've built there. I think Bob Bugner is a good coach. I think between Luongo and Reimer, they're going to have enough goaltending. That's a team that I've really got my eye on as far as maybe taking a bit of a leap this year. And don't forget, I mean, they are only a couple of years removed from being a 100-point team under Gerard Gallant. So we'll see how that shakes out. But they're a team that I think is worth keeping your eye on this year.
That's a very interesting pick. And, of course, they have Mike Hoffman. So there is definitely reasons to watch that team for sure, especially when they play Ottawa. But I'm glad to hear that you're in the same boat I am with Toronto. Their weakness was defense, and they did essentially nothing to address that this offseason. They went and signed Tavares, who does not play defense. So I'm not buying the hype around them either.
Yeah, I mean, I like Morgan Rielly a lot, and Jake Gardiner has got his moments, although in the playoffs last year certainly wasn't one of them. But I think overall, you look at the teams that win the Cup outside of that outlier in Pittsburgh, and you need that guy. And say what you will about John Carlson, and there are a lot of people that don't believe that he is an elite defenseman, and there was much outcry over the money that was spent on him to retain his services. That's the kind of guy you need, a guy that's going to eat up minutes, that's going to play in every phase of the game, and at the end of the day, you know, make a play or do something that gets you over the top. They had him. The Leafs don't. Vegas didn't, and I think that's one of the reasons why things shook out the way they did for the Capitals.
One more question, looking at the Pittsburgh Penguins, because, hey, if the Caps don't repeat, at least you can hope that they can beat the Penguins. While most teams are getting younger, the Penguins went out and signed Matt Cullen and Jack Johnson. what exactly is the strategy going on in Pittsburgh right now?
Well, Jack Johnson is another in a string of middling, struggling defensemen that they think that they can put into their system, give some time with Sergei Gonchar, their assistant coach, and you know, become reclamation projects. Justin Schultz was one of them. Ian Cole was one of them. Jamie Oleksiak, you can argue, is one of them. They've got a few of these examples now. So I didn't hate that deal necessarily for Johnson. I just hated the term. I didn't quite understand why you'd have to go 5 years for the guy unless you think by year three it's going to be the envy of the league that they got this guy locked up.
Right.
But the rest of the lineup, though, again, it's just unimpressive. I mean, they're hoping against hope that everybody kind of clicks the way that they have in the past. That remains to be seen. You just wonder overall where the window is on that team. I mean, anytime you have a healthy Sid and a healthy Malkin and a motivated Kessel and a healthy Matt Murray, there's always going to be the possibility they're going to win the cup. But the rest of the lineup is sort of it feels like it needs a bit of a refresh, and maybe that comes at the trade deadline. I'm still not sold on Derek Brassard necessarily fitting into that team the way that they thought he would.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. They're still dangerous and by no means should be written off, especially in a 7-game playoff series. But it's not the big scary team that we've seen in the past. And maybe that has something to do with them finally having fallen to the Capitals and they don't necessarily have the same, shine to them as they used to.
Well, fans will get a chance to watch the Capitals and Penguins renew their rivalry as the Penguins come to Washington for the Caps home. Oh, wait a minute. No, it looks here that the defending Stanley Cup champions are going on the road to their biggest rival the night after their home opener. So I guess we can look forward to that. Anyway, Greg, truly the season never ends for you. I really appreciate the time. Tell the beautiful people where they can find your work.
Sure. Head over to ESPN, click on the NHL tag, and you'll find myself and Emily Kaplan and Chris Peters writing every day, pretty much, even in the summertime, about a great many things. There's a ton of really fun stuff we have planned for you this year, including the fact that the NHL is back on ESPN. ESPN Plus, our subscription service, is going to have an NHL game every day of the season, pretty much. So you can look for our work surrounding those games and for us to be on TV and such talking about those games. It's a really exciting time. I know that ESPN sometimes, gets a certain reputation for its approach to hockey. I can tell you that in my time there, their interest and investment in it has been quite impressive. So I'm happy to be a part of what hopefully is another hockey renaissance here on the Worldwide Leader.
Sounds good. Thanks for the time today, Greg. I really appreciate it. Have a good summer.
Cool. Anytime.
That was the man, the myth, the legend, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, helping us fill the void of summer before more hockey. And that void is getting smaller and smaller. Hockey, we are still in August. We're about midway through August. But you know what? Hockey's beginning to be in the air. We are not that far away. Training camp will begin before you know it. And then we'll all be watching that glorious banner raise into the rafters at Capital One Arena. Hope you enjoyed this special episode of the Capitals Faceoff Podcast. For Greg Wyshynski, this is JJ Regan. Now let's get the puck out of here.